I suspect that a good number of us spent our childhoods waiting for the adults to show up, only to realize eventually, maybe while sitting in a car wash watching those giant blue mop fingers slap against the windshield, that we are the adults. And we're just as terrified and clueless as everyone else was in 1994 or 1964 or whenever it was. And I think that there is a certain panic that sets in when you start to realize that maybe you aren't actually broken. You've just stopped being able to unsee the scaffolding of existence, or, you know, in other words, the reality of the human condition. So you start noticing that the social contract is actually, it's like a stack of stained napkins held down by a paperweight. And that a lot of the people that we call visionaries these days are really just people who talk the loudest while everyone else was taking a breath, right? It's kind of like staring at one of those magic eye posters. You remember those things with the 3D images? So you spend years squinting until your head ached trying to see the sailboat or whatever, right? And then one day your focus shifts by a fraction of a millimeter and you finally see the 3D shape. Congratulations. It's right there, plain as day. But, well, the problem is once you've seen it, you can't just go back to seeing the colorful, meaningless static. You're kind of stuck with the sailboat, at least until you close the book and start over. As I get older, I am increasingly convinced that a significant portion of what we call mental health crises are usually just people who accidentally caught a glimpse of the wiring, the scaffolding. And, you know, we label it as maladaptive, but honestly, when you notice that the world is ultimately, it's just a series of loosely connected accidents held together by social momentum and low-grade anxiety and duct tape, to me, that seems like a pretty high level of cognitive function. So take the way people look at you, for instance. I think we spend this exhausting amount of time and energy trying to be seen without realizing that most people aren't even looking at us. And what they're looking at is a convenient space in their own lives that happens to be roughly your shape. And I've watched this happen. Let's say you're at a bar or a birthday party or something, and you're mid-sentence sharing something that feels heavy and real, and you can actually see the lag in the other person's eyes. It's kind of disappointing, right? Because they aren't really listening to what you're saying. They're trying, but what they're doing is they're just waiting for you to finish being the deep friend or the funny one so that they can just then go back to the version of you that makes them comfortable. And if you stop being that version, if you suddenly become inconvenient and or boring or genuinely messily sad, the irritation is almost physical. It's as if you've glitched in their matrix or something. They don't actually want you. What they want, the utility of you. And, you know, the thing is no one's exempt from this. I mean, we all do this to some degree, even if it's unconsciously. And we all navigate the world like we are the only protagonists in a role-playing game. And everyone else is just a non-player character with a limited dialogue tree. Yeah, it sounds kind of brutal, right? But this is the baseline. I think we like the idea of unconditional love because it sounds like, I guess, a safety net. But the truth is that the majority of human relationships are actually just a series of unspoken negotiations. And it's not that people are inherently evil or anything. It's just everyone has a carrying capacity. And I've noticed that people stay as long as the version of you that they've invented or invited into their life doesn't create too much friction. So you're the reliable friend or the stoic partner or whatever. But then something happens, the circumstances change the equation. Maybe you lose your job or you get depressed for some reason, or I don't know. Maybe you stop being useful in that specific way that they've grown accustomed to. And when this happens, you can feel the temperature in the room drop by a few degrees. And it isn't, I wouldn't call it a blow up necessarily. It's just an adjustment, like a slow drift. And then you notice the phone rings less and, you know, the invites get a little vague. And it feels like a subscription service that you forgot you were paying for. As long as the content is what you signed up for, you keep the autoplay on, right? But the minute that the vibe shifts or the price of the maintenance goes up, you start looking for the cancel button. I'm starting to think that personality itself consists mostly of a collaboration of these maintenance strategies. You see someone who's, let's say, incredibly charming or who's obsessively nice, and after a while, you stop seeing a trait, and then you start seeing, like, a workaround. And it's a survival response that's been running for so long that it's basically solidified into an identity. I look at myself sometimes the way that I sometimes use gallows humor to keep people at arm's length, or how I'm afraid to show any vulnerability because I don't want to be a burden on anybody ever. And it's a little unsettling because it's like realizing that your favorite sweater is actually just a bunch of bandages held together by habit. And once you see the coping mechanism underneath, you can't unsee it in other people. So you're at a social gathering somewhere and you realize that you aren't looking at people so much as you're looking at a room full of walking, talking scars who are trying to convince each other that they're okay. And that's humanity. That's just the price of admission to exist. I have spent a lot of time thinking about the lie that we're told about effort. You know the one. This is the lie that there is a straight line that runs between the sweat on your forehead and the trophy or the award on your shelf. But I look around and I see people who've been grinding themselves into a fine gray powder for decades, doing everything the right way. And they're still just entrenched. And meanwhile, you see someone else who just happened to be standing in the right patch of sunlight at the right time, and they miraculously stumble into the exact same outcome without even breaking a sweat. And it's not that effort doesn't matter. I mean, of course it matters. It just doesn't control the things we were promised it controls. So we basically treat work or hard work like it's a vending machine where we put in the coins and we get the snack. But in reality, it's actually more like one of those claw machines at some sketchy arcade. Now, you can be the best, the most skilled player in the world, but if the claw is programmed to be loose that day, you're probably going to go home with nothing but a cramp in your hand and an empty wallet, right? And I think we stay in that loop because the alternative, which is admitting that a massive chunk of our success or failure is just really just a chaotic roll of the cosmic dice, that is too terrifying for most people to sit with, especially when you're trying to fall asleep. And this makes me look at authority differently as well. So I'm at a point now where I realize that nobody really knows what the hell they're doing. I mean, everybody's winging it to some degree. And sure, some people, of course, have some reputable expertise that many of us rely on and trust. And I respect that where and when it's actually functional, which unfortunately is all too rare these days. But on the other hand, there is a lot of bullshitting that happens with good posture, regardless of the title or the degree, or regardless of the expensive suit. And the closer that you get to these so-called important people, the more I think you see the same frantic, low-level panic that we all have. And the only difference is that they're just better at wearing the mask, partly because they have privileges that make this possible. So what they've done is they've just learned how to lean back in the chair and say, well, let's circle back to that, when they're actually just trying to remember if they left the stove on or something, just like everybody else. And I think that once you see that authority or expertise doesn't necessarily guarantee competence, I think you realize that there's really nobody in charge, just people who think they are. And then all the people, of course, who have been duped into believing that the leadership knows what it's doing. All right, so then there's the materialism and the consumerism issue, and how we obsess over things and stuff. Well, for example, like that one specific model of espresso machine that costs as much as a used Honda and promises to turn your kitchen into a dimly lit Italian movie scene. That's advertising for you. So you get the fancy thing, even though you can't really afford the fancy thing, and you set it up, and you spend 20 minutes or so cleaning pressurized sludge out of the metal filter, and you realize you're still just a person standing in your underwear feeling anxious about the money that you spend. And the machine is there, but the sophisticated European lifestyle it sold you is nowhere to be found, of course. So it's like ordering a meal because the picture on the menu looked like it was going to be a spiritual experience. And then you realize halfway through the actual chewing that you weren't even really hungry. Because really, you just like the idea of being the kind of person who eats that kind of meal. I think these days a lot of people are now waking up to the realization that they don't really want the thing. And what they want is the version of themselves that exists in that imaginary future where they own it. So what they want is the version of who is who's finally relaxed or whole. But you know, the thing itself is just atoms. It doesn't have, it's not going to have the capacity to hold the weight of your existential baggage. I mean, that's kind of like trying to use a stapler to fix a sinking ship, right? It's clearly not the right tool for the job. You know, we spend a lot of time chasing ghosts, mostly because we confuse the object with the vibration that we think it's supposed to give us. I think one of the most offensive lies that we've been fed is that time is a steady, rhythmic march like a grandfather clock in a quiet hallway. And it isn't. Time is uneven. It's jagged. I mean, obviously time is relative. And it has this nasty habit, you probably noticed, of disappearing when you're not looking or paying attention. So as I get older, I'm noticing that it's like my days just seem to blur into this indistinct soup. And the years seem to compress into a single weekend. So, all right, you spend your 20s waiting for that so-called solid moment. The moment where you finally feel like a real person with a real life and some clear sense of gravity, right? But that feeling rarely appears. And instead, you just wake up one morning and realize that you've been wearing the same pair of shoes for 6 years and you can't remember 2023 at all. It didn't feel significant in any way. It just felt like a long series of Tuesdays where you forgot to buy laundry detergent or something. And then maybe you have this realization where, this realization that there are, actually whole chunks of years you don't really remember. And that's kind of a disturbing thought to have. Honestly, if I died tomorrow, I'm pretty sure that my last thought wouldn't be about my loved ones or the beauty of a sunset or something actually significant and important. It would probably be something incredibly stupid, like wondering if I left the bathroom light on and how much that's going to annoy the person who has to come in and find my body. I mean, that is the level of meaning that we're actually operating on most of the time. And I think that this applies to how we present ourselves too. Because we are, you know, in this day and age, we are constantly catching ourselves performing. You likely have a specific voice for when you're talking to a mechanic so that he doesn't realize that you don't know where the coolant goes. You know what I mean? You probably have a different, slightly more intellectual posture for if you're in a bookstore, just in case someone judges your choice in reading material. And, you know, this is normal stuff, and it's harmless, of course, for the most part, until maybe you're alone in a bathroom at 2:30 a.m., and you've had a few drinks or something, and you realize that you don't know which one is the real you, and that maybe there isn't a real you at all, and that you don't actually exist, and that whole rabbit hole. Because, well, maybe, I don't know, you start thinking that you're just a collection of various masks held together by a social security number and a caffeine habit or something. So yeah, it's hard to tell where the person ends and the character begins. And if you stripped away all the roles that you have to play for other people in life, day-to-day basis, you know, whatever it might be, the reliable co-worker or the cool partner, I think you'd probably find that what's left is surprisingly insignificant, like a hermit crab who lost its shell and is suddenly very aware of how soft and edible it is. And speaking of things that don't exist, let's consider closure for a minute. Because we have been in our society conditioned by movies and media to expect some sort of meaningful final scene where everyone sits down and explains exactly why they hurt us or why they left or why the project failed or why you lost your job and so forth. But in the real world, things just stop and they end. And a lot of times there's no reason. I am not a believer that things always happen for a reason. You know, who knows? Maybe you get ghosted or the job ends with an automated email. And that sucks, of course. Or, I don't know, maybe the friendship fades into this permanent, we should grab a coffee soon loop that both of you know is a lie. So I think of this idea of closure as it's just a polite word for a story that we tell ourselves so we can stop obsessing. So it's a do-it-yourself project where you're basically left holding all this leftover meaning. Like kind of like pieces of an IKEA furniture that didn't fit into the final desk or whatever. And you're trying to convince yourself that the wobbling that's happening is intentional. So there's no clean ending here. You just eventually get too tired to keep holding on to the grudge or the confusion. And well, then you drop it. And it's not because you understand. It's because your arms are just sore. And I think it's a strange realization to have while you're doing something mundane, like waiting for your toast to pop up. That meaning isn't actually a property of the universe, unfortunately. Meaning is more like a sticky note that you keep slapping onto things. And, you know, those sticky notes, they're temporary, right? They always fall off and get lost. I think we walk around with this assumption that objects have, or objects and events have some kind of inherent weight built into them. Like they come preloaded with a soul or a purpose, but they don't. Because you are the one doing all the heavy lifting. And you're the one who's deciding, for example, that a specific ring is a sacred heirloom rather than just a circular bit of metal that makes your finger turn green. Or that a career path is a calling instead of just a way of trading your inherent heartbeat for rent money. And for about 5 seconds, it's incredibly freeing because you realize that you can unhook yourself from the expectations of people who've been dead for 100 years. But then the 5 seconds pass and it gets a little cold. Because if meaning is something that you assign, well, then it means that it can be unassigned too. So you can wake up on a random weekday and realize that the project that you spent 3 years obsessing over suddenly feels like a pile of damp cardboard. And the weight just kind of shifts. And the universe doesn't really care. It doesn't ask for your permission before it just drains the color out of something that you thought was vital. It's like living in a house where the gravity is constantly changing. So one day you're grounded and the next you're bumping your head on the ceiling because the things that used to anchor you, they don't weigh anything anymore. I'm starting to think that this is why we cling so hard to our brokenness. It's a way to give the chaos a name. I mean, if we're broken, then there's some kind of blueprint we're deviating from. There must be some correct version of us out there somewhere, right? I mean, that's the implication. But if we aren't broken, if we just finally saw the sailboat in the magic eye, then we have to deal with the fact that there was no correct version to begin with. And yeah, that's kind of terrifying. So, all right, what do we do with all this? Well, I think we should start by skipping the toxic positivity and consider that maybe the solution is to just stop trying to fix the unseeing. So if I had to offer anything that isn't a live, laugh, love, throw a pillow, it would probably sound something like this. I think once you accept that the scaffolding is unstable and that there's no one in the pilot seat, you can stop wasting energy trying to find some manual. And you start just leaning into the improvisation. So what I'm trying to do in my own life is practice a kind of radical honesty with the void. If a relationship is conditional, then I'll try to enjoy the conditions while they're favorable and not see it like a cosmic tragedy when the math changes. Now, maybe that's easier said than done, but nonetheless, that's what I'm trying to do. And if meaning is assigned, that's not going to prevent me from slapping post-it notes on things that make the day feel less like a slog. But I am not going to be shocked or surprised when the adhesive wears off. And sooner or later, the adhesive will wear off. So I think it's about lowering the stakes. And well, because here's the thing. Life, I think, becomes a lot less terrifying when you realize that it's not a test that you pass or fail. It's just a weird, crazy, unintentional, absurd comedy that you've been cast in without an audition. Riders on the Storm. And you're probably not broken. You've probably just developed a very inconvenient level of pattern recognition. But honestly, personally, I think I'd rather see the wires and the scaffolding than spend my life always wondering why the set pieces keep wobbling. But that's just me. All right. That's all I've got today. As always, thanks for listening.